Hi, this is Kaylin. You are listening to All Independent Reno Podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes or anywhere else where you are listening. Thanks. Ow! Keep stabbing my eye.
Strawberry sunshine, like cherries and cream. Champagne and berries, my love supreme. But is this honeymoon a
Dave, welcome back to the All Independent Reno Podcast. Happy New Year. This is the first episode of the new year, featuring my conversation with Dave Alistair of the band Dank Jewel, also pronounced Dankjewel, I hope I said that right, which is a Dutch word for thank you very much. I just learned that when I was having my conversation with Dave. So he was a really cool guy. We talked about his music, how he started this band, and just his background about him going to school in LA for music and producing, and just, you know, overall learning himself. But Dank Jewel is a five-piece psych rock, it's like psychedelic garage pop rock band. It's really good stuff. We were just listening to one of their songs called Honeymoon Phase off their new EP that you can find on Bandcamp right now. So definitely check that out. I'll post a link to that on our post, so it'll be easy for you to find. But otherwise, if you just search for the band Dank Jewel, you can find their article that they had written about them in the Reno News and Review by Brad Bynum, as well as the Reno Gazette Journal review, the Music Beat review, I think it's called, by Michael Sion. Go read about them there as well. But they're a really great band. I was very happy to have a conversation with Dave about his music. So let's get into our interview with Dave Alistair from Dank Jewel. Dave, is it Alistair?
Alistair, yeah.
Alistair from the band Dank Jewel. Thanks for coming by. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we pronounce it Dankjewel.
What is it?
It's a Dutch word, Dankjewel.
Oh, that means like thank you very much.
Thank you very much in Dutch, yeah.
Oh, okay. I've been saying Dank Jewel
the
whole time.
You know, I had a guy ask us on Facebook Messenger. He kind of hit me up and he's like, hey, man, I love your guys' music. Is it Dank Jewel or is it Dankjewel? Like Dutch. And, you know, I kind of just told him it's whatever he wants it to be, you know? Half of our band will say Dankjewel and half of our band will say Dank Jewel, so
okay.
It's kind of up for interpretation. I say Dankjewel because when I came up with the concept, I was in Amsterdam, and I think I was at like a McDonald's, and on the trash can it said Dank, and I thought, I was like, oh, that's funny, you know, because right. I'm from California, and then so I looked at it, and I was like, what does that mean? They're like, thank you, and so it's the only real word that I really said to people, you know, when they'd hand me stuff, I'd be like Dankjewel, and so for some reason I just really thought it was cool.
Okay.
And then I wanted to...
And that's where the band name came from.
And that's where the band name came from.
Ah, great. That's a great little segue right
yeah.
there. So.
Yeah, it's nothing too deep, but...
How long ago were you in Amsterdam?
I was in Amsterdam probably... Oh, man, what is it? It's December now, so it's about a year and, you know, 4 months or something. I went in August of last year.
Okay.
Of the year before, you know, last summer. And I was there for about two... I was about there for 2.5 weeks, yeah.
Nice, just traveling around.
And yeah, well, stuff out. You know, I was with this girl who was a model. She was from Amsterdam, and I was living in LA. She lived with me, and then she inspired me to go out there. She told me to come stay with her family and stuff. So, I pretty much just bought a plane ticket and headed out there to meet her family and see her culture.
That's pretty cool. So yeah, experiencing the world and yeah, that's, just checking things out.
Yeah, she was kind of returning the favor from staying with me in LA. I brought her up to Reno and stuff and showed her Reno, and you know, she had never been to Reno or anything.
So you're from Reno originally?
I'm from Detroit.
Oh, Detroit originally. Okay. Yeah, that's so, what we were talking about.
Yeah, so I was born in Detroit, Michigan. And then my mom's from Flint, Michigan. My parents split up when I was in like earlier on, so I went back and forth. And then my dad was like, we need to get out of here because stuff was, you know, getting real bad over there.
Right.
And so we made it out to Reno, and yeah, and I've been here ever since. It's about 13. Yeah, about 12 okay. or 13 came out here, yeah.
But then you said you were living in L.A. as well. When did yeah. you move out to L.A.?
Yeah, so when I turned 18 years old, I moved down to Los Angeles to go to music school. Went to the Musicians Institute down there.
Cool.
I had a couple friends from Reno that were going down there, and we, you know, we went down there, and yeah, it was a lot of fun. I went down there by myself, but then met up with other people that I'd known from Reno. One guy's name's Drew. He's in a band called Cynical. He's a good friend of mine that I'd seen at some parties and stuff, you know, in Reno.
Okay.
And we play totally different styles of music, but we were just, you know, Reno friends.
Yeah.
So.
Cool. Yeah. Well, how did you get together with all the guys with Donkeyville? Am I saying that right?
Donkeyville.
Donkeyville.
Yeah. Donkeyville. Yeah, okay. There you go. Cool.
So how did you meet all these
yeah,
guys?
Yeah. So, well, dude, so the first person that I ever met was Alex Korstinski. So he goes by Alexander Taylor. He's in the Sextones. He's the bass player for Sextones. He also plays in What It Do.
Okay, I met him outside of the Proto Martyrs show. He was handing me a Donkeyville.
That's Danny.
That was Danny. Oh, okay.
Yeah, he told me about that. Yeah, yeah. So this is Alex, and he's also did a project called Synthesizer, which was super cool with this girl,
yeah.
Alex Crow. They were amazing.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's just super talented, great bass player, and has really, you know, specific taste for things. You know, he's like, he just loves, like, you know, if you know, if he's ever, you know, if you ever are curious about anything, like, he's heard it, you know what I mean? Like, if you talk to him, but he's just like one of those guys. Mm-hmm. But so I've known him for, I think it's almost been a little over 10 years. And so I met him. I was in a band called Groovebox Replica back in the day, which was like a psychedelic group. And he showed up with like a bunch of effects and a didgeridoo or something.
A didgeridoo?
And just started like, yeah, he just showed up to the show. I was like, hey, man, I'm going to show up with a didgeridoo. And I was like, cool. So he shows up with his didgeridoo and delays and everything and just starts, you know, tripping everybody out.
So the members in the band, they also have a bunch of different side projects as well that they do.
Yeah.
A bunch of different local, you know, bands here in Reno.
Yeah. Yeah. So Danny, the other guy, who's the guy who handed you the flyer at the Protomar show.
Okay.
He just plays with everybody. Like anybody who's a musician, like, knows Dan, because he'll show up with his guitar and just, you know, play anywhere. He plays all the blues jams, and the jazz dudes know him, and he'll show up and just play with everybody, you know? And then, but he hasn't ever been in a real serious band. And then, so this is his kind of one of his babies, you know, with me. He's stoked to be a part of this as much as I am.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Aaron, I've known for a long time, cause my band Babel from LA came up here to play a show at the Studio on 4th, which is like a Mars Volta kind of band. And
ooh, I like the Mars Volta.
Yeah. 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 We were really into the Mars Volta. And we actually played with, I actually worked for them for a while in LA. But then, so we played a show with Aaron, and that's where I first met him with his band, What It Do. I knew he was a great drummer then, but I've been his friend ever since, and I've always wanted to play music with him, but it just finally happened. And then Paul played in Rain.
So Aaron, the Beatles tribute.
Yeah, so Aaron and Paul both play in Rain together. Aaron is Ringo, and Paul is Paul.
And Paul is Paul, that's fitting.
Paul is Paul, which yeah. I think he was named after Paul, because his dad is like the best. Next to him, his dad is like the best Paul McCartney besides Paul McCartney.
Oh, wow.
So it's pretty crazy to listen to.
I haven't got a chance to see them yet, but I've always wanted to see them because I'm a Beatles fan, of course. Like
yeah.
Most everybody. Either you're a Beatles fan or Elvis fan. I'm a Beatles
fan. Dude, they kill it. Yeah, they're so good. It's like super close. This is the closest you can be. I mean, it's crazy when Paul's like in our band because I watch him do the Rain shit, and I'm just like, what? I'm just like, that's crazy, dude. I'm like, you're not in my band. Who are you?
Yeah.
You are an imposter, dude.
So you guys all got together how long ago?
Yeah, I was in Los Angeles, and I called Alex, and I was like, dude, I want to do this project, and I think you're the dude to do it. And he's like, cool. And then Aaron had come down to play a show at Palm Springs with Rain, so I went to the show, and I met him backstage. That's when I met Paul. Mm-hmm. Paul was playing. He was Paul McCartney. So I met him backstage. That was the first time I met him. And then I was kind of like, oh, Aaron, like, would you like to do this group? He's like, cool. And then he's like, what about Paul? You know, Paul's, I said I wanted to do some kind of like psychedelic kind of, some kind of, we were going to call it, I think the concept I originally told him was like modern retro. So it's like retro music done in like a modern, with modern production. That's not necessarily throwback, but that has, you know, hints of all the, you know, older stuff that's from the 60s and 70s. And now we're even getting into 80s stuff. And then he said, what about Paul? You know, Paul's great. So I said, cool. And then when I got back to Reno, Danny was like the go-to guy because he was, you know, he's just hungry to do whatever. You know?
Right.
So when I got back, he was like, let's hang out. Let's hang out. Let's make some music. So that was just kind of, you know, just kind of fell into
everything
place.
Everything just fell into place.
Yeah. So it just kind of fell into place then. And then, yeah. And then the only reason I ever came back to LA was because, or came back from LA is because I was in my house when I got back from Amsterdam was infected with like toxic black mold.
Oh.
So.
Oh, I read about that in the Reno News and Review article.
Yeah. So yeah. I was, yeah. So I went to the hospital and my parents had to come down and like pick me up and bring me up here. So the only reason this band even happened was just because I had, you know, had to come back up to Reno because of that. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Is there everything good now or?
Yeah, pretty. I mean, I'd say I'm probably at this point almost 85% recovered.
Okay.
Yeah. I was.
Wow. 50. I didn't think mold would really do that to you. Like, yeah, affect you that bad.
Yeah. It depends on how bad it is and like how it, you know, affects you and how your immune system is and everything. I think at that point, for some reason, I was working so much and grinding kind of so hard that I'm sure I was burning the wick at both ends. So,
oh yeah.
And it was really bad. It was like my bed was right next to the wall with all the mold on it. So I got the most exposure. So,
oh,
but I went on a huge like alkaline diet, cleansed everything out of my body. Couldn't drink. Couldn't smoke, but you know, I'm back in the game.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, back on top.
I'm alive. I'm sitting here alive. I didn't know through that process what was happening. So
because that could kill you.
It can kill you. It can definitely kill you. I wasn't sure if I was gonna survive, how long I was gonna survive. It was a ticking thing. I wasn't sure. At first I didn't even know if it was black mold. I thought maybe it was like I thought I was having a stroke or something when it first hit me. But I was just having a very severe like panic attack because of the vertigo symptoms.
Okay. So you got a hold of your parents and they helped you come back to Reno and
yeah, well, I went to the hospital. I was hospitalized. I was out of doctors and it got so bad to the point where I couldn't drive and I was having issues even just getting up. And so I was just like, yeah, this is not going to work out. I need like assistance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I could not like take care of myself. So that was a little bit scary. So
are your parents, are they musically inclined or
no, my dad,
instruments or anything like that?
No. My grandfather, my mom says, she says I get it from him and he played the accordion and sang, he had like perfect pitch and he played piano and organ and stuff.
Okay.
So his name was Victor. I have a very similar build to him and I look a lot like him. So she says I take after him a lot genetically. And then my dad grew up in Detroit during Motown. So
Very cool.
He saw the Supremes and, you know, Stevie Wonder and all the Motown reviews when they were happening. Nice. So just growing up, like we were in a very musical household, like to experiencing music at an early age, probably like one or two. I mean, I was obsessed with Michael Jackson. I saw Michael Jackson at like 3 or 4 years old. So,
like a concert, you got to see Michael Jackson.
Yeah, we were
concert.
At the Palace Auburn Hills in Detroit. It was a Dangerous tour, I think. So we saw him then. It was when he was doing the Dangerous. I was really young, but I totally remember it. And so it was something I can't forget, you know? So,
yeah,
I think that was a moment I knew I wanted to do music, but I obviously not, you know, the pop, that kind of stuff, but it was inspirational.
It made an impact on you.
It made an impact to me on early on. Yeah.
So that's when you were like, I really want to get into music. And when did you first start playing?
I started playing drums at 2 years old. So my parents got me one of those little like Fisher Price drum sets, but I used to play Billie Jean like all day.
Oh,
like
yeah.
I would sit on that thing, I'd put Billie Jean on it.
And that beat.
I think every drummer, if they can't play Billie Jean for 4 minutes, they need to go back and do it.
Yeah. just a solid beat.
It's 101. If you have not mastered that, you're not shit.
But you're not the drummer in the band, but you can still play bass. You play play guitar and you're the vocalist and play synthesizer.
Yeah.
Obviously you play drums as well, so you're an overall like just a multi instrumentalist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I start writing most of the stuff. I usually write it when it starts. And then I look at it like this. I do like a 4-year-old like painting that comes to my head.
Yeah.
And then I have really guys with great chops come in and clean it up.
Okay.
So I try to make it super barbaric in the beginning. It's like, this is exactly what I'm going for. I'm not overdoing this.
You just
like,
put down the base layer.
I put down the sketch.
The roux of the soup.
Yeah, exactly, dude. Exactly. So yeah, I just lay down like the most fundamental thing, and then I have, you know, more advanced people that are better at their instrument do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I love the EP that you guys just put out, and that was released for that came out on the 19th of November. It like just came out.
Yeah.
And you had a sold out show at Holland Project. Yeah. And it's only four songs, but they're all so fucking catchy.
Thank you.
And they have great hooks and like great melodies. My mom was over here earlier and I was playing it for her. She's like, wow, that's really good. Like, they're a local band. Holy
that's
shit.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And, dude, that's so cool. Yeah. Yeah. We definitely had a fun time making that. It was a lot of fun getting everybody together and making actually it happen.
Well, did you get, you got your musical chops from going to music school in LA?
Yes and no. I wouldn't give it to that.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Not entirely credited to the music school.
Yeah. Well, so I always grew up playing punk rock and, like psychedelic music. We played in this band that we thought we were doing like Mars Volta shit, but really just we had effects and we were just like making noise.
Just going crazy.
It was just like, yeah, it was just crazy. I mean, we just had a lot of energy. We jumped around and did crazy stuff. But when I got to MI, I was introduced to like the major scale and pentatonics. And then I furthered my education and got into jazz and modes and stuff like that. So I was first introduced to that, but I didn't know how to use it. Mm-hmm. And so I was just introduced. I sounded like super, I kind of did like a musical reset, I guess. And then I started playing at I always had like a good sense of rhythm though, you know, so that came natural. And then right when I got out of music school, I went to play at a black church in Inglewood. It was a gospel church.
Okay.
And so I learned a lot about improvisation there because the whole service is based off of like improvising the guys, you know, what he's talking about.
Yeah, they don't just have sheet music written.
They don't have any sheet music. No, it's nothing like that. It's the sermon. The guy gets intense, you get intense. You know, that he wants you to chill out, you chill out. You know, so you kind of just, you have to just feel it out and you get fired if you can't. Yeah. So, and then I went to Compton and did the same thing there. I just went all around LA and just played with whoever, you know, whoever invited me in to play. And I think that was a big learning experience there.
Yeah, just so. Giving you a little bit of everything, pretty much. But your music is what would you describe? I'm gonna pronounce it
Dankjewel.
Wrong.
Dankjewel. You can say Dankjewel, dude. It's cool.
Dankjewel.
Yeah, you can say that.
I mean, it sounds cool. Dankjewel.
Yeah, it's a Dankjewel. It's a jewel. It's a Dankjewel, man. Yeah, you can say that. You can.
So Dankjewel. I mean, what would you describe your music as for people that haven't heard you before?
Yeah, so in my head.
Because I could tell you what I think the music sounds
like.
Well,
please do after this.
Oh, I will. Yeah.
So in my head, we're kind of like an R&B psychedelic band.
I could see
that. It's like rhythm and blues. And I don't mean like R. Kelly R&B. Like, I mean like Motown R&B, mm-hmm. you know, because I think the melodies are big time influenced by Motown and stuff from the 50s and 60s. And I say that because I think the Beatles were big time inspired by Motown. So I think that, you know, a lot of those British acts were like, that was their whole thing. They loved Motown, you know? So mm-hmm. I think I always accredit the rhythm and stuff back still to Motown. But I would say, yeah, I'd say it's like R&B psychedelic, pop pretty much. Yeah. I think there is pop in it for
sure. Well, cause you have the hooks with all the lyrics and stuff like that. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people credit you as or comparing you to like Tame Impala or something like that, but they have their own kind of thing, you know, but that's the first thing that pops into my head just because they are something the most popular that has a similar kind of sound to
that's
you
relatable.
Guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sure. Do you like Tame Impala?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do like Tame Impala. You know, the first time I ever heard Tame Impala, I was like, what is this? This is so cool. It had like a really cool aesthetic to it, and it was like very intriguing. Mm-hmm. I think they put out the very first one that was kind of bigger, which was
Currents.
No. This was it had the song. Okay, this was the one. It was the first like big LP they had come out, and it had the picture of the mountains on it. That I don't even know Tame Impala enough to know like all their songs. Or their albums, but it was the first one that they were introduced to because, you know, it kind of got around the vinyl record kind of fans.
Oh, yeah.
Like the vinyl record fans kind of had that first one I think it had Apocalypse Dreams on it, was the song. It's a really cool song.
I'm not sure. I'm looking it up right
now. Yeah. So it was, I think it was the first full length they did. I know they did it with Dave Fridman, who was the guy who did the Flaming Lips and MGMT.
Yeah. Okay.
And I've always been like a giant fan of that dude. Like Dave Fridman and I love Flaming Lips. Like they were one of my favorite bands. Like when I was like, you know,
Flaming Lips are awesome.
When I was like 13, I was like obsessed with Yoshimi, Battles of Pink Robots. And that whole album was just like so cool, such a cool concept, you know, the girl like battling cancer. And I always thought that was just like so cool how Wayne Coyne did that. But yeah, Dave Fridman was like a big influence on the mixing. And I think that's why a lot of people give us a lot of that reference to Tame Impala, probably because the guy who produced that album has been someone I've like listened to for so long and love so much.
Yeah.
I don't really see the songwriting in Tame Impala's as much as we are, as though we have Paul from Rain, like in the band.
Yeah.
I would say we're not even as Beatles as like they kind of come off. Like I think his voice that he puts on in the early stuff is like a lot more John Lennon than I think Paul doesn't like to sing like just like Paul McCartney, you know?
Yeah.
I think we try to do it a little bit different, you know, But yeah, I can definitely see the comparison, and I think that we probably just love a lot of the same music. Like Dunyan, the band that they were mostly inspired by, I've always loved. So
I've never heard of them before.
Yeah, Dunyan.
Are they from Australia too? Because Tame Impala is from Australia.
Yeah, Dunyan. Oh, dude, this is going to sound horrible, but I think I'm not exactly sure where Dunyan's from, but I know they're European. I want to say they're Nordic, or they might be. Or they may be
Icelandic.
New Zealand. I don't think they're from Australia. They might be. I don't know. But they kick ass. And I heard them a long time ago from Amoeba. There's like a little Please Like Me.
Oh, yeah. Their little pamphlets.
They have the little pamphlets. Yeah.
Like,
so
Amoeba recommends this. Yeah.
So back when I was like real young, I think I was like 16, they had Dunyan in there and I first heard them. When I heard Tame Impala, I was like, dude, this is just like Dunyan.
Yeah.
And I know he likes them. I know he was a fan because I know he credits them. But, yeah, they're great.
Was that Inner Speaker? Was that the
Inner Speaker? That's the one.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's the one. That was the first one I ever heard. My buddy Johnny
Thanks,
Harpo.
Internet. All right.
Yeah, Johnny Harpo. He works. Yeah, he's in Rigorous Proof. Those guys turned me on to Tame Impala.
Rigorous Proof. I really like Rigorous Proof. They're a really great local band. It seems like everybody knows everybody here in Reno, which is really nice.
It's a small town. It's a small town. You can't get away with much.
So you have this like psychedelic rock with a bunch of great hooks and great production too. How did you guys end up recording the album? Was it done at a studio, or the EP? Was that done at a studio, or was it done like in your house? Or
yeah. So the whole EP was done at my dad's house.
Oh, cool.
So like when I came,
at my parents' pad.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, it's funny because I'm like 26. I sound like a loser, but like after the hospitalization happened to me, I had a whole studio set up, which is a beautiful house in North Hollywood, which had like this giant A-frame wood and drums sounded like Motown. It just like, it was so good, dude. It sounded like John Bonham drums in there.
Oh, nice.
It was like the best, dude. And so I was really, really sad to leave that. You know, I was going to take over that house and a friend of mine was going to move down. Actually, Johnny Harpo was going to move in with me. And we had this all planned out, and then everything just went to shit. So I went up to live with my dad, and stayed with him.
In North Hollywood?
No, this is actually in Reno.
Oh, yeah, in Reno, okay.
So, yeah, over in South Reno. So, as I was recovering, they thought it'd be a good idea, you know, if I was recording, because it was helping me on my path to recovery. So that's pretty much we just set up in the house. We took over his media living room, which is awesome, like hexagon drum room that we soundproofed. We did all the drums in there. We recorded some drums in the hallways to get some cool reverbs.
Yeah. So natural reverb. That's not like a plug-in afterwards.
We have some of that.
Okay.
I mean, we definitely do. And then I upgraded. Yeah, I had a bunch of money that I was saving up for rent to renew the lease. So I had a bunch of money left over that I had put into studio equipment when I got here.
Yeah, you're like, let's throw this into the music.
I was like, let's do it. Yeah, why don't we just do it? So bought a new interface, bought some great mics, and pretty much just made for damn sure that the sounds in the room sounded the way we wanted them.
Yeah.
I think for me, I think that's the most important thing you can ever do for a recording.
Mm.
We have gotten some great props on this, which I am super humbled by and I appreciate. And people ask
you can
me
hear that
how the hell
recording.
We did it. You know, they're like, where'd you record this? What's the deal? And I was like, dude, somewhere along the road, someone told me that if you can record if you can get the room to sound the way you want it, some of the mics don't matter. Some of the recording equipment doesn't matter. It's all about the vibe in the room. It's all about how you tune the drums, all about how you tune the, you know, if the room sounds good, you're good. Yeah. You're good to go. Even if you have shitty mics, people are still going to love it.
Yeah, and just have a little bit of know-how in what you're doing. So did you have the know-how, or was it, I think it was credited Alex Koch as your mixer engineer. Did he help out and with that a lot, or was it a collaboration with everybody?
Yeah, well, yeah, it definitely was. I mean, so the gear that I got was kind of like a stem from, it was like kind of a child of his studio. So my buddy Alex Koch in LA had his studio, which he was using Universal Audio like plugins and Universal Audio interfaces.
Oh, nice.
And he's a big UAD fan. So he turned me into the UAD, and he was like, dude, like for the music that you love, like this is like where you want to go.
Yeah.
It's like Beach Boys, everybody recorded with this. This is it, dude. And so I was like, cool, I'll jump into it. And I loved him way more than the Waves plugins. But I've always been recording music, but you know, he kind of helped me along the way get some gear. My buddy that is an engineer for the guy who does like a lot of the Bruno Mars stuff also like really helped me like get this studio set up. I gave him a call and I was like, dude, what do I need to really be great? And he was like, dude, you need a great preamp, you need a great interface, and you need a great mic.
Yeah, just drop like, a little bit of money on that.
Drop them on those.
Makes a huge difference.
And it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
So I bought a tube UAD 610, you know, preamp, and that's and everything goes through it.
Yeah, tubes.
And it's butter. And if you got tubes warming it up, you're good to go.
Yeah. Well, what kind of equipment do you use? Because I know you have, you play guitar and use a synthesizer in your shows. You've only played one show, though, at this point, right?
With this band, yeah.
With Donkeyville.
With Donkeyville.
Donkeyville.
There you go.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, I got
it. That was awesome.
First time.
Sounded good. You're speaking Dutch already.
I know.
Ready for Amsterdam.
Makes
me
want to go to Amsterdam.
There you go. Perfect, dude. That's all you got to say, and people will love you.
I've heard great things.
It's a great city.
Get off the plane.
It's a little dangerous, but it's a great city.
I hear that, too. Yeah,
And it's not dangerous in like the sketchiness. It's like, they have like the bike riders and the trains just flying by.
Yeah.
It's so dangerous. Like if, you know, everyone's drunk and everyone's smoking weed, and then
there's
just bike riders just going through 50 miles an hour, I mean, there's so many bike accidents.
Holy shit.
It's nuts. I saw a lady get hit by a train. It's just like,
there's
no like things that say like, hey, there's a train here, don't step here. It's like, you should look for the train. If you don't see the train, you're going to get hit.
Yeah. Be aware of your surroundings.
Be aware of the surroundings. Yeah. I learned that like pretty quick into the whole thing.
But. Well, my dad works for the Union Pacific, and they have all these like stickers and air fresheners that says like, see tracks, think train.
Right.
Like, you wouldn't realize how many people get hit by fucking trains.
Oh, it's crazy.
All the time.
Yeah.
Either intentionally or not intentionally.
It's nuts. I mean, even especially because some of the tracks in Amsterdam is like right outside the bar. So you could like step off the curb and you're just like, you know, it's like trams.
They're set up for failure.
They're not trains, but it's unbelievable like who designed that, because it's like these standards are not what America's got. Like you can't.
Right.
But then again,
American,
you know, maybe just because Americans are kind of stupid and they have to put fucking
obvious things.
Put foam on everything and
do not use electronic products while taking a shower.
Yeah, stuff like that. Basic stuff. But back to the equipment, I think you asked me about what the equipment
with your guitar and synthesizers that you use. What do you like to play? What is your guitar? What is your go to guitar?
Yeah, my go to guitar is my Jazzmaster. Fender Jazzmaster,
I got one of those too.
Yeah, so
everybody loves the Jazzmaster.
I think the Jazzmaster is amazing. Yeah. I didn't have.
I have a Jaguar.
Jaguar is awesome too.
Yeah.
The Jazzmaster is cool. It's awesome. I just got that guitar, and I actually didn't use it on the recording, so it's irrelevant. So I just got it. I have a Gretsch that I used on the recording.
Okay,
which is a Gretsch hollow body.
The semi hollow body.
It is a full hollow body.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a Chet Atkins.
Oh, nice.
And it's a Countryman, and it's maybe I don't know if they're semi or they're full hollow, but it's an amazing guitar. I love that guitar, so I use that on that. My synthesizer is my go-to synthesizer. It's like the shit, dude. I had to get it when it came out. So Dave Smith Instruments, who makes the Prophet, that were big in the 70s, and Oberheim. This is like the late 70s and into 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Oberheim was like really famous in 78 for like his very thick, huge synthesizer sounds.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of had a really aggressive tone, and they're amazing. And so they put out a hybrid together that's called the OB6, and it's a hybrid between, it's a collaboration between Dave Smith Instruments and Oberheim, and it's like the most fully analog, it's like a six voice poly analog synth that basically is like the best. I don't know. I think it's the best analog synth that's come out in the past, like, you know, 20, 30 years.
So you have like the patch cables and stuff like
that?
No,
it's not a modular synth. So that's a modular synth. So this is a six voice. This is like a full, this is like a polyphonic, just like basically like programmable synth that has like, you know, every synth is like built up of, you have your source sound, you know, which is your white noise and your shaper, your scene waves and everything. And then your two modifiers.
Okay.
So this is just a basic, like, this is a basically polyphonic synth. It's not a modular synth. But modular synth is like the mugs, you know, you hook up to and everything, but expensive. And modular synths, they sound cool, but they're very unpredictable and they're kind of a headache to deal with.
Mm.
They're cool. I'm going to have one one day, but they're expensive.
Yeah. Well, the synth sound, it sounds really great. It really makes up like a big portion of the band of your sound for Donkeyville.
Yeah. It's not a cheap synth. That's for sure.
Oh yeah.
It's not a dinky. It's not a rinky dink one.
No. I mean, you can tell the you know, production quality, the musicianship. That's a word, right?
Yeah.
And everything that you just put into this with this EP. When are you guys playing another show? Because I missed that show.
Yeah.
Which I'm fucking pissed about because you gave out a bunch of cassettes.
Yeah.
For the show too.
Oh, I'll bring you one.
Oh, sweet.
For a souvenir, you can have. I don't know if you have a tape machine, but I'll bring you one.
We have one in the car.
Cool. Okay, cool.
So we'll drive it around.
Yeah, I should have brought you one today, but I'll bring you one.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah. So our next show, we don't have a solid next show. The issue is that Rain's going on tour for about 3 months. So we have this lull. We finished our second EP already. The writing's all done. And so we're just recording it right now. And we're trying to get it done before they leave. So we may be doing, we're having a couple of scheduling conflicts because everybody does so much stuff. So it's inevitable that it's really difficult to get everything to work out well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're having a couple of issues and we're trying to figure some stuff out. But the show must go on. And no matter what, I'm going to bring Dank Jewel like in soon. Like no matter what, even if it's, you know, sub members, I don't really care. I just want to make for sure that, you know, we'll be back. We'll be here soon. It'll keep trucking. We're not just going to put this out and disappear, you know?
Right.
So I'm very adamant about making sure that it's going to.
Well, you guys can at this point. I mean, it's kind of like developed some steam. So are you guys eventually going to, like, what's your plans? Or do you want to like have a label pick you up? And if you do want something like that, I mean, what label would you guys, you know, want to be on? Do you have any like ideas in mind for people to reach out to?
Yeah, we do. I mean, it would be cool. We want to be on an independent label that cares about us and that has acts that are similar to us. I'm more interested in being on a label like that than, I guess, like a bigger label that's just going to kind of throw promotion and just kind of like kind of throw us out there.
Like even the Sonys or the Columbias.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like this, they're doing a lot of distribution these days. And you kind of need that if you're going to do at that scale. But I think in these early steps, it's like really important just to get with people that are going to care about your music and surround you with artists that are, you know, like you and in your demographic, you know. I don't have any specific labels really in mind.
There's so many of them out there, but
there's so many little ones. Yeah. It's not like we're gunning for like a certain label sound. It's not like, oh, we made this album for Sub Pop, you know?
Sure.
Like, that stuff's cool, but I think for our music, we'll just hopefully find somebody like that's, you know, independent and manages art as well.
Yeah, somebody that's going to support you guys and do the best that they can to, like, put your stuff out there and book your shows. And
yeah.
So are you wanting to do, like, the whole tour thing? Like, go on?
Yeah, we're planning a tour for, in May, we're going to do a West Coast tour.
Nice.
We're going to do Seattle, San Francisco, Portland, you know, San Diego, Los Angeles.
Yeah.
The whole San Francisco, obviously.
Festivals. Do you guys want to do the whole festival?
Yeah, that's kind of what this band was developed as.
Okay.
Like when I imagined this band first, I was like, yeah, this needs to be a festival band. Like we want to make.
Oh, for sure.
We want to make people feel good and we want to put on a good show. And we want that show to be, you know, people, you know, they can smoke some weed and take some psychedelics. And
I could see that. Yeah. Listening to the music, I'm like, I could be in a crowd at like, you know, Tree Fort or Outside Lands or
any of those. Yeah. FYF any of those. Yeah. So that's like that's probably the circuit that, you know, we're kind of trying to make our way to.
Yeah.
I think that's where our best, you know, shows will be. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the crowds will get that the best. And the new material that we're writing is like even more, I think, facilitated to the kind of a party.
Okay.
Because the first songs, they're kind of more psychedelic. They're dreamy. They have the vibe. we have two more, like, we're introducing, like, a little more pocket, a little more danciness, a little bit more of a drive, a little more, the synths are kind of coming in a little more. And then we're also introducing a little more, like, avant-garde and kind of, like, dark aspect to it. That's a side that I don't think the first EP really touched on as much. The first song off this album is called White Buffalo, which is a little bit more, it's a little bit more whimsical. It's definitely the most musically ambitious song we've written, yeah, for sure.
Well, you've had a lot of great, like, press, just even locally, just recently. You had an article in the R&R. Michael Cyan did a thing, and the Music Beat and the RGJ.
Yeah.
They played you on 100.1 The X. Like, you guys are marketing yourselves very well as a band, which needs to be done nowadays.
Totally. We're trying to kind of get, like, the bang for the buck for this one. You know, we're trying to do it right and kind of just get out there. And we promoted pretty hard for this show. Like, we did and didn't. I mean, we didn't spend an incredible amount of money on promotion, but we definitely made sure to, like, make it a point to, you know, put it out there.
Just do all the grassroots shit, get a hold of the local papers.
Yeah, we did flyers and got a hold of local papers. And actually, when we released the first single, Mike Cyan, like, reached out to Alex and was just kind of like, oh, this is really cool stuff.
Yeah.
And then I think Alex was like, cool, like, would you be interested in doing, like, a paper thing? Or I don't know exactly how that worked, but he kind of, like, was like, this is really cool stuff. And then it kind of was like, cool, this will work. And then we approached Brad Bynum from Elephant Rifle.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't get a call back from him for a while, but then he just out of the blue hits me up and is just like, I'm down for Dank Jewel.
Yeah.
He's just like, I'm down for it. Like, we didn't hear from
back. Give me some Dank Jewel.
I sent him a text and I think a couple weeks, me and Alex both sent him a text, a couple weeks went by and we're kind of like, oh, it's cool, whatever.
Yeah.
And then he hits back and he's like, yeah, I'm down for the Dank Jewel. Let me know when. And he showed up and he loved it. And he was the main person I wanted to interview because he really has a great way with words with music.
Oh, for sure.
He loves music.
I really liked that article. It was a fun read. I read that, like, standing in line somewhere. I picked up the article. So you do the producing and you have, you know, Donkeyville, you know, where are you wanting to, you know, eventually go on tour and that sort of thing.
I mean, mainly 100% of the time, like, what I'm working towards most right now is just making sure that I can do music 100% of the time.
Yeah.
I don't care what I'm working on. I've been working on building the studio. I'm working on getting to a spot, maybe in Midtown, maybe off of Wells, maybe downtown, looking for artistic areas where there's cheap rent, brick buildings, you know, standalone brick buildings.
It's getting harder to find around here.
It's getting harder to find. So I'm trying to jump on it as soon as possible, and I'm trying to kind of jump into a spot where I can kind of set up shop and start to build a studio and just pretty much just work out of it. You know, I think the prices in LA are a lot more expensive, so I can find something a lot more affordable here. So, and the competition isn't as steep. You know, like, the people in LA, majority of them are just, like, amazing, and they're making this career out of it. Reno doesn't have that as much. There's amazing talent, but it kind of, like, the competition is not as steep. If you got, you know, if you got the goods, you know, you're the guy.
I'd love to see another studio here. I mean, I know, you know, a few of the studios, like Dog Water Studios.
Rick. Yeah, Rick's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all of them. And they do the Worst Little Podcast, too, out of there. And what's the other one? The one in 4th Street. I forget the name of that.
Well, my a couple friends of mine, you know, Greg Gilmore, they got a spot.
Oh, I know Greg. Okay.
So Greg, they just started a spot. I think they're branding it Loud as Folk.
Oh, like,
this is a new thing. It's a Spike McGuire.
So
these are, these are all guys who played around Reno for so long. You know,
yeah,
super cool guys. They're also kind of all friends with the Dogwater guys.
Okay.
And they're doing the Loudest Folk. They're just started recording, I think, and they did 5 songs on 100.1. They took it over for the 5 days. They got a little spot. Of course there's Tom Gordon, who's, like, probably the biggest Reno name.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about Tom Gordon.
Yeah, he used to be, I think, I don't know if he, I know he worked.
He did the Grandma's House thing, right?
Grandma's House.
Yeah.
Over at Grandma's House. Yeah. So that was, like,
I think
that's probably the biggest studio probably Reno's seen.
Yeah.
I think, like, Dr. Dre was recorded there and a couple things were over there. But I think that was, like, I think that's, like, the biggest thing that Reno's, like, contributed maybe to the bigger overall music business of that side. So I don't know. I think it'd be cool if, like, some more, like, analog indie bands, like, kind of popped into the world.
That'd be great.
You know, I think it'd be cool because I think Reno's always, you know, Reno's known for, like, 7 Seconds and punk rock and stuff like that. So it'd be cool to kind of like have some kind of really cool, like kind of more like modern indie artists come out of Reno.
Yeah.
I think that'd be cool. And some cool analog studios, you know, with some real equipment in it. Not so digital. Just,
not all the digital stuff, even though it's so much easier to like mix in the box,
yeah.
You know, just on the computer and not like a big console sort of thing, because
right.
those are more expensive and you need a lot of fucking room for that right. sort of thing. But
and the tapes, you know, the tapes are expensive. And
oh, yeah.
If you're doing analog and everything. But I think there's a really cool sound to it. And I think people really respect that. Mm-hmm. I think as time goes on, you know, I think it's going to be a commodity to find that. You know,
yeah,
it's going to
sure.
be more and more rare to be able to go out and be like, oh, I recorded this on tape. You had to get this sound to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of that. I'm a big fan of keyboards that they only made four of, and people wonder how the hell, what that sound was.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what the hell was that? Oh, some Casio keyboard that they made for like 2 months,
mm-hmm.
and they thought it sucked, so they threw it away. But it's a gem. But it sounds great.
Yeah.
And you can throw the leads on it.
Well,
so.
And hey, you guys put out your EP on cassette tape, too.
Yeah.
Not only can you download Dunkville on their Bandcamp page, but on cassette as well.
Right.
You can buy a physical copy of it. And it sounds different on cassette.
It does sound different on cassette. And yeah. the reason we did it on cassette because we wanted kids, the Holland Project kids, if any kids in Reno have cassette players.
Yeah.
If there's any. Maybe some of them didn't. We want to just have a physical thing that's cool, that's obsolete. And they're cheaper. They're cheaper than CDs and everything. It's a cool old thing.
Cheaper than vinyl, too.
It's cheaper than vinyl.
Yeah.
It's cheaper than CDs. And we wanted to have like something they could hold, you know?
Mm.
And even if they just went home, they got a download card with it, too. So even if it's just something they make an art piece out of,
right?
You know, they could put it up on their wall or something cool. Pretty much the reason we even did the cassette was that it was just a cooler download card.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
It was just like, this is a vibier download card that you could play if you have the cassette tape. You know, we did the glitter tapes, which was like everybody got a unique one.
Those were cool looking. I saw that.
Yeah, they were. Everybody yeah. got like a unique color.
Yeah.
So we wanted to mix it up a little bit and do something a little different than just the CD. I don't know. I think CDs are ugly.
Well, it's CDs. But I don't really see CDs anymore anyways.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, we got it. Yeah. And we're living in this day and age where like those things you can't get a hold of as easily, like for some reason have come back
mm-hmm.
into style, you know? Like, if you can't get it, it's like, I need that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what is that? What is that dad hat from the 90s?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's been really great talking to you
Hell
about
yeah.
your music and hanging out. And I'm really looking forward to what you guys do next. So I wish you all the best of luck.
Right on, dude. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Cool. Thanks, Dave. I appreciate it. There's our conversation with Dave Alistair from the band Dank Jewel. Big thanks to Dave for coming out and talking to me about his music and our conversation. We had a really great time hanging out. So be sure to check out their music at dankjewel.bandcamp.com and follow them on Instagram and Facebook. Also, big thanks to Kaylin for doing our intro to this episode. Anyways, check out future episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to leave us a rating or comment. And until next time, this is Dave with All Independent Reno Podcast. Thanks for listening, and have a good one.